This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Jennifer Crumbley? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the alleged crime, then offer my analysis. Jennifer Crumbley was born in April 1978 and lived in Michigan. She married a man named James. At some point, the couple moved to Florida and had a son named Ethan in April of 2006. The family moved to the state of Washington before moving back to Oxford, Michigan. Now moving to the timeline of the alleged crime. Jennifer would eventually be accused of a crime that involved an attack perpetrated by her son, Ethan. So I will describe the crime that he committed, then discuss the charges against Jennifer. On November 30, 2021, 15-year-old Ethan Crumbley went to Oxford High School, where he was a student. He was carrying a Sig Sauer 2022 9mm semi-automatic pistol, which his father had purchased a few days earlier. The gun was a gift to Ethan. A teacher discovered a drawing on Ethan's desk, which caused some concern. The drawing featured a semi-automatic pistol, a person, and a bullet. The pistol was pointing at the words, "The thoughts won't stop, help me." The bullet had the words, "Blood everywhere," written above it. Between the image of the pistol and the bullet, Ethan had drawn a person with a laughing emoji right below them. The person appeared to be bleeding from two gunshot wounds. Toward the bottom of the drawing, Ethan wrote two sentences, "My life is useless" and "The world is dead." The teacher reported Ethan to school officials, who called Jennifer and James. They arrived at the school and examined the drawing. Ethan attempted to minimize its significance by saying it was for a video game he was designing. School officials told Jennifer and James that Ethan would have to receive mental health counseling within 48 hours, or they were going to report this incident to social services. The officials claimed that Ethan's parents resisted the idea of Ethan leaving school at that time. Ethan was returned to class. At no time did Jennifer or James mention that Ethan may have had access to a gun, and Ethan was never searched. The pistol was in his backpack. At 12:50 p.m., Ethan produced the 9mm pistol and started shooting students in the hallway of the high school. Ultimately, he murdered four students and injured seven other people. He was taken into custody without incident about 5 minutes after the shooting started. He was charged with 24 different crimes, including four counts of first-degree murder and one count of terrorism. On October 24, 2022, less than a year after the murders, Ethan pleaded guilty to all charges. On December 8, 2023, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, plus 24 years. Jennifer and James were charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. They allegedly failed to secure the firearm that Ethan used in the murders and allegedly ignored warning signs. They fled, but were arrested right away. Jennifer's trial started in January 2024. The trial for James is scheduled to begin in March of 2024. During Jennifer's trial, she testified in her own defense. She indicated that she would not do anything differently if given the opportunity. She wished that Ethan had killed her and James instead of his victims. That was nice of her to include James in her statement, like he was willing to sacrifice his life as well. Essentially, Jennifer's defense strategy was to put the blame on her husband, saying that it was his responsibility to secure the gun. On February 5, 2024, the case went to the jury. At one point during the deliberations, they had some difficulty understanding the instructions and asked the judge for clarification. At the time I am making this video, the jury has discontinued deliberating for the day. Now moving to my analysis. There are two theories available to the state to prove that Jennifer was guilty of involuntary manslaughter. The first theory is gross negligence. The state argued that Jennifer knew about the danger to another, using ordinary care would have prevented injury and she failed to use ordinary care when a reasonable person would have known the result was likely to be serious injury. The second theory is based on a failure to perform a legal duty. Jennifer willfully neglected or refused to control her son, Ethan, and the death of the victims was directly caused by this failure. The idea that Ethan would murder someone was reasonably foreseeable. All the members of the jury have to agree that one of these theories was satisfied, but they don't have to agree on the same theory. It is completely understandable that the jury would struggle with these theories, as they are both vague and confusing. The defense argued that Jennifer was not responsible to secure the 9mm pistol. It was not her job. Rather, that responsibility fell to James. He is the one who purchased the pistol. It was registered in his name. Furthermore, Jennifer was not aware of mental health symptoms that would have led her to believe that Ethan was going to kill people. This brings me to the question, was Jennifer guilty of involuntary manslaughter? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Jennifer was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Jennifer had a criminal history involving DUI and check fraud. It is reasonable to believe that Jennifer and her husband, James, fled from authorities after the shooting, despite Jennifer's claims to the contrary. She has proven that she is willing to violate the norms of society. In journal entries and text messages to a friend, Ethan expressed concerns about his mental health difficulties. Ethan had sent messages to Jennifer about seeing ghosts in the family house. He thought the house was haunted. He mentioned a demon that was throwing bowls. His door had been slammed. He saw clothing fly off a shelf. And Ethan said that someone walked into the bathroom, flushed the toilet, and left the light on. Any reasonable person would have been alarmed by toilet demons, especially those that would leave the light on. They come from a special, non-eco-friendly place in hell. Ethan claimed that his mother laughed at him when he mentioned seeking mental health counseling for his symptoms. A co-worker of Jennifer's testified that Jennifer told her that Ethan was hearing noises around the Crumley family house. Jennifer was having an affair with a firefighter at the time of the shooting. The firefighter testified that right before the shooting, Jennifer texted him concerned that Ethan would do something dumb. The firefighter knew that the Crumbleys had recently purchased a pistol. He asked Jennifer where it was. She claimed that it was in her vehicle, which was not true. There were times when Jennifer appeared to be inattentive, like she was more concerned with her horses and having an affair than with the well-being of her son. On November 29, 2021, Ethan Crumbley was in class at Oxford High School when a teacher saw him using his phone to search for ammunition. School officials met with Ethan to discuss this behavior and left a voicemail for Jennifer. She did not respond to the school, but she did send a text to her son. She wrote, "LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught." On November 30, 2021, the day of the shooting, Jennifer saw the disturbing drawing but failed to mention the gun to school officials. In addition, she did not search Ethan's backpack and she wanted him to remain at the school.
On the morning of August 1, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
Moving to the exculpatory factors, Jennifer testified that Ethan never asked her for mental health counseling. He only had some anxiety about taking tests and what he would do after high school. She said that all the talk about ghosts and demons was just an ongoing joke that they had in their house. Perhaps Jennifer didn't actually know that Ethan had pronounced mental health symptoms. Right before the shooting, when school staff members were waiting for Ethan's parents to arrive, school counselors did not observe any behavior by Ethan, indicating that he was a danger to himself or others. These trained professionals could not foresee the shooting, but the state argued that Jennifer should have possessed this ability. Why is she being held to a higher standard than mental health professionals? After the shooting, Jennifer texted her firefighter lover and indicated that she was upset that Ethan was a killer. It is clear that she was not happy about the shooting. Even though Jennifer refused to take her son home on the day of the shooting, the school could have sent him home anyway. School officials chose to allow Ethan to remain at the school because he had no previous disciplinary infractions. James is the one who actually purchased the pistol that was used in the murders. Therefore, it was his responsibility to make sure that Ethan could not gain access to it. Jennifer indicated that she left it up to James to secure the weapon. In addition, there is no federal law and no law in the state of Michigan requiring a gun owner to lock away firearms from children. The gun may have been a gift to Ethan, but Jennifer testified that it was only for use at a shooting range where they spent time together as a family. The state never proved whether the 9mm pistol was locked or unlocked. If the gun was locked and Ethan had to work diligently to find the key, his parents bear less responsibility than if the gun was unlocked. School shootings are low probability events. They are covered in the media to a great degree, but statistically, they don't actually happen that often. Unlikely events are very difficult to foresee. When considering the evidence in this case, do I think that Jennifer Crumbly was guilty of involuntary manslaughter? No, I do not think she was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The state did not meet their burden of proof. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Jennifer and James Crumbly were not good parents. They did not take Ethan's mental health symptoms seriously. In addition, Jennifer was having an affair, which served as a significant distraction and may have led to feelings of uncontrolled happiness. This affair euphoria can facilitate antisocial or irresponsible behavior. People engaging in affairs tend to believe that there are no consequences for their behavior. After Ethan murdered 4 students in his high school, people were understandably furious. They were frustrated that school shootings are so difficult to prevent. The state examined the lives of Ethan's parents and decided that their immorality would make them easy targets for prosecution. The government wanted to set a new precedent of holding parents responsible for school shootings. Jennifer's trial became the test case. The only problem for the state is that they didn't have enough evidence proving Jennifer's guilt. The prosecutor had to rely almost solely on impugning Jennifer's character. For example, the prosecutor implied that Jennifer didn't care about her son because the pregnancy was unplanned, and that Jennifer should have hugged Ethan on the day of the shooting. The state's case came down to discourteous demons, an oopsie baby, and a failure to hug. Jennifer is never going to win a Mother of the Year award, but prosecuting her was a mistake. Now moving to my final thoughts. Despite my opinion that Jennifer is not guilty, it was completely unacceptable that the gun used in the murders was not secured. Locking a firearm away from children is a simple step that can prevent a great deal of harm. Instead of prosecuting people for involuntary manslaughter when an unsecured gun is used to commit murder, maybe the laws should be changed to mandate the securing of firearms when children live in the residence. As far as the mental health aspect of this case, I think that everyone missed the fact that Ethan was struggling. He believed that he was hallucinating and was clearly disturbed by that experience. Mental health symptoms often generate behavior that causes the concealment of the symptoms themselves. Despite this concealment, Jennifer did have indications that something was wrong, but she failed to act. She was distracted by an affair with a fireman. Jennifer should have known better than to play with fire.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Allegedly is back for season 2, a new crime every time. In each episode of Allegedly, you'll hear a crime told to you by the person who experienced it, intermingled with actor portrayals, original music, immersive soundscapes, to create a cinematic experience for your ear. Season 2's stories include a young woman finding salvation in God, only to realize the leader of her church was running a sex cult. A case of a con artist swindling a kindly older man until he couldn't do anything to stop her. A landlord exploiting a mentally disabled man and keeping him a virtual prisoner. An act of bullying spinning a promising young man's life into total chaos. And a luxury boat captain inexplicably detained in a foreign prison with seemingly no hope of ever getting out. New episodes release every other week. Look for Allegedly from Voyage Media anywhere you listen to podcasts.